Chapter 1. The sun was beating down on me so brightly that I had to keep my eyes tightly closed. It felt so good. I was like a cat basking in the sun, drinking in the warmth, letting it soak in and fill me up. I could lie here all day. Soft sand under me, the sound of the ocean in my ears. All I needed was for the breeze to be a little bit stronger. The warmth was building and becoming too hot. The smell of the ocean was changing. Had somebody started a bonfire on the beach? Why would they do that on such a beautiful sunny day? The smell of the fire got stronger and stronger until it wasn't just in my nose. I could almost taste the smoke, and I sat bolt upright in bed. The beach was gone, but the smell remained. I looked around, trying to make sense of my surroundings. It was almost pitch black, but in the dim light coming from the window, I could make out thin lines of smoke. Smoke! That meant there was a fire! I tried to jump out of bed, but my feet got tangled in the covers and I tumbled to the floor, the wind knocked out of me. Frantically, I kicked at the blankets, terrified and desperate to get untangled. I struggled free and scrambled on all fours, bumping into the night table, reaching up for the lamp. I grabbed it and pushed the button, but nothing happened. I pushed the button again and again, but it wasn't working. I pulled myself to my feet. The smoke was getting thicker. I stumbled over to Tony's bed. "Tony! Tony! Wake up! Get up!" She didn't budge. What was wrong? Without thinking, I reached down and slapped her across the face. Her eyes shot open. Even in the dim light, I could see a look of complete confusion and terror on her face. "There's a fire!" I screamed. "Something is on fire!" She didn't move. She looked completely stunned. "There's smoke! A fire!" I stammered. I had to make her understand. Suddenly, the look of confusion changed to panic. She was like a wild animal clutching at me, flailing her arms. I stepped back, afraid she was going to hit me. Instead, she grabbed my nightgown and held on. "We have to get out!" she yelled. She was still holding on to my nightgown as I pulled her to her feet, out the door, and into the hall. There was more smoke out there, much more. Tony froze. "We have to make sure everybody gets out. Go, pound on doors," I said. Her eyes were still panic-filled, but she nodded her head and let go of my nightgown. "Fire! Fire! Fire!" Joe the cook was yelling from somewhere down below. "Get Katie! Get Malou! Make sure they're up!" I screamed. Tony stood there, unmoving, as if she couldn't even command her feet to walk. "Go!" I pushed her hard, propelling her down the hall as I started in the other direction. There was banging behind me as she hammered on a door and called out the girls' names. I reached the second door and was about to pound on it when it popped open and Sarah and Dot tumbled out, bumping me into the wall. We stared at each other, speechless. I opened my mouth to say something when Joe called out again, "Fire! Fire! Fire!"
"We have to get out!"
Dot yelled. "Yes, yes, we have to get everybody out. Go wake up Tess. She has to get out."
"She's up. She's out. She didn't come home last night," Sarah said.
My mind raced, glad that she was safe, wondering why she hadn't come home, where she was, and Tony, Malou, and Katie ran down the hall and pushed the three of us ahead of them. We stumbled down the stairs, bare feet pounding against the wood. It was almost pitch dark in the windowless stairwell, but we had walked up and down the stairs so many times over the years that we didn't need light to find our way. We hit the second floor together. The smell of smoke was strong, but I still couldn't see any fire. The door to the little girl's dormitory was already open, and Joe and Miss Webster appeared. In Joe's arms were two of the littlest girls. Miss Webster held two more by their hands. Trailing behind Joe were the others, moving two by two and holding hands the way we'd practiced in fire drills. If only this were a drill. The girls had fear in their eyes. Some were whimpering, and some had started to cry.
"Quick now, ladies," Joe called out. "Tony, Betty, all of you big girls go down. Show them the way. That's right, good girls."
He made it sound like this really wasn't anything more than a drill. As a group, we went down the steps.
The sound of our feet thumping down the worn stairs was all we could hear. We reached the bottom, spread out, and lined the front hall walls. Like magic, Tess appeared, already holding the hand of one of the little girls. Unlike us, she was already dressed. Dot threw her arms around Tess as the little girls, led by Joe as if he were the Pied Piper, came down the stairs. We allowed them to pass. Through the dining hall and to the door they marched. When Miss Webster appeared at the end of the line, we followed her, our feet thundering as we crossed the veranda and ran onto the lawn. Our bare feet sank into the wet grass, and a rush of cold, fresh air entered my lungs. Suddenly, Mrs. Hazelton, our matron, appeared. She was in her nightgown as well, standing with Joe and Miss Webster and the little ones. She called out for everybody to be calm, to move away from the building. As always, she was in charge, and we followed her orders. Outside, the full moon and the stars bathed the lawn in light, and I could see clearly. I kept moving away from the building as if it were in pursuit, and I could see that we had to get farther away. Finally, with the full expanse of the lawn and the burning house behind us, we stopped. The little ones now started to sob. More fully awake, they now knew enough to be scared. A pair of the girls, Debbie and Carol, broke ranks and rushed to me. "We're all right now," I said to the girls. I swept Debbie up and she wrapped her arms around my neck. Carol pressed against me. I knew the little ones needed to be comforted, but having them against me gave comfort to me as well. "It's going to be all right," I said. I wasn't sure if I was trying to reassure them or me. All of the other girls were spread out, scattered in groups of two or three, some standing and some slumped to the ground. All were staring back at the house. Tony came to my side. She had two of the little ones clinging to her as well. There was a chill in the air that made it seem more like early April than nearly summer. None of this seemed real. It was as if I'd woken up from a dream to find myself in a nightmare. I wanted to pinch myself and wake up from this one as well. Then I saw the flames spilling out as the fire burst through the top corner of the house. Smoke was billowing out, staining the darkened sky, making it look as if a bottle of ink had been spilled into the heavens. I edged toward the others as they moved toward me. We seemed involuntarily drawn to huddle together. Nobody spoke as the fire roared. Now we couldn't just see it and smell it, we could hear it. The fire was consuming the house, our home, and the only home I'd ever known. The fire grew, getting louder and louder as more flames, light, and smoke became visible. The whole upper floor was now engulfed, each window alive with fire. I counted over, left to right, until I found our bedroom window. "It's there in our room," I said to Tony. We watched as the flames engulfed it, the place where we had slept, where we had lived. Our beds, our clothing, everything we owned was being eaten by the fire. "They'll be here soon," Tony said. "Can't you hear the fire trucks?" I shook my head. "We'll all be fine," she said. "Then why are you crying?" I asked. Tony didn't answer. She knew as well as I did that nothing was going to be fine. Even if the fire trucks arrived soon, the house was already gone. There was an explosion, and a ball of flames shot into the air as the edge of the roof collapsed and the corner window blew out. I screamed and jumped back. Everybody else seemed to scream at the same time. I turned to Tony, but she was gone, running away across the grass, heading toward the trees and the river. I turned to go after her. She needed me, but the two little girls were clinging to me even tighter now, crying. "Tony, come back!" I yelled, but she didn't hear me, or if she did, she didn't pay attention. I tried to take a few steps, but the little girls clung even tighter, locked in place. They needed me too. Tony would be fine. She was away from the fire. "Is everybody here?" Mrs. Hazelton asked. She went from person to person, looking at each one, dropping to her knees when necessary, calling out their names, counting. I thought we'd gotten them all out. Unless somebody had hidden under a bed or... "All the little ones are here," she said. I felt a rush of relief flow through me. We hadn't missed anybody. Mrs. Hazleton turned to Joe. Could you please go down and make sure Tony is fine?
Yes, ma'am.
He turned and left. The rest of you, come closer. Come here. Gather around. Her voice was calm, reassuring. We all moved closer until we were pressed together, almost as if we were one solid mass. It felt good. It chased away the night chill and the fear of the fire. Mrs. Hazleton continued to speak. Her voice, that accent always made me think she was as royal as the Queen of England, was calm and reassuring. She spoke so softly that I couldn't make out all she was saying, but it still made me feel safer, knowing that somehow she'd take care of the situation, take care of us, the way she always did. The sirens had started quietly, but they were much louder now. I turned around, as did others, looking into the distance, down the road, toward town. The fire trucks were almost here. I turned back toward our home. Flames were shooting from the roof, and thick black smoke stained the night sky, the fire throwing out light and shadows. The trucks would be here soon, but it was too late for the house. Too late for us. Then Mrs. Hazleton's voice came again, but she wasn't talking. She was singing.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me.
Her voice got louder with each line.
I once was lost, but now am found, was blind, but now I see.
Others added their voices.
'Twas grace that taught my heart to fear, and grace my fears relieved.
More joined in, including me, and the chorus surged.
How precious did that grace appear the hour I first believed.
There was a tremendous crash as the entire roof collapsed, sending smoke and ash into the sky. Some of the girls screamed again. Mrs. Hazleton's voice emerged once again, and many of us sang with her as the fire trucks rumbled up the driveway.
Through many dangers, toils, and snares, I have already come. 'Tis grace hath brought me safe thus far, and grace will lead me home.
Home. Where would my home be?